Let's turn and read together in God's Word in 1 Kings chapter 17 and commencing our reading at verse 8. 1 Kings 17 and reading together at verse 8. Verse 8 says, "Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, 'Arise, go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and dwell there. See, I have commanded a widow there to provide for you.' So he arose and went to Zarephath. When he came to the gate of the city, indeed a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, 'Please, bring me a little water in a cup that I may drink.' And as she was going to get it, he called to her and said, 'Please bring me a morsel of bread in your hand.' So she said, 'As the Lord your God lives, I do not have bread, only a handful of flour in a bin and a little oil in a jar. And see, I am gathering a couple of sticks that I may go in and prepare it for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die.' And Elijah said to her, 'Do not fear. Go and do as you have said, but make me a small cake from it first and bring it to me, and afterward make some for yourself and your son. For thus says the Lord God of Israel, the bin of flour shall not be used up, nor shall the jar of oil run dry until the day the Lord sends rain on the earth.' So she went away and did according to the word of Elijah, and she and he and her household ate for many days. The bin of flour was not used up, nor did the jar of oil run dry, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke by Elijah. Now it happened after these things that the son of the woman who owned the house became sick, and his sickness was so serious that there was no breath left in him. So she said to Elijah, 'What have I to do with you, O man of God? Have you come to me to bring my sin to remembrance and to kill my son?' And he said to her, 'Give me your son.' So he took him out of her arms and carried him to the upper room where he was staying and laid him on his own bed. Then he cried out to the Lord and said, 'O Lord my God, have you also brought tragedy on the widow with whom I lodge by killing her son?' And he stretched himself out on the child three times and cried out to the Lord and said, 'O Lord my God, I pray, let this child's soul come back to him.' Then the Lord heard the voice of Elijah, and the soul of the child came back to him, and he revived. And Elijah took the child and brought him down from the upper room into the house and gave him to his mother. And Elijah said, 'See, your son lives.' Then the woman said to Elijah, 'Now by this I know that you are a man of God, and that the word of the Lord in your mouth is the truth.'" Amen. We know God will add his blessing to it. Last Sunday morning, as we looked at the life and times of Elijah, we noted a new challenge at Zarephath. You remember that God led Elijah away from the brook Cherith, and now was leading him into a new stage of his ministry. And God led him to a place called Zarephath. And what a challenge was awaiting him there. God told him to go, and God said that through the widow woman that God would make provision for Elijah at that time. God asked him to undergo a very difficult, hazardous journey of over 100 miles. And when he arrived there, the widow woman was making her last meal. And then she and her son were going to go aside and die. But God miraculously again provided, not just for Elijah, but for the widow woman and also for her son. When it seemed there was no further hope, there was hope in God. When it seemed her resources were finished, she was going to have enough and more than enough to cope. And Elijah was to learn further lessons at that place called Zarephath. It was a new challenge, but his God was the same God. A God whose power knows no limit. A God whose promises are never broken. A God whose provision never runs out. That's the God whom we worship and whom we serve today. Today, as we come to these verses that we have read together, I want you to note a home thrown into turmoil. A home thrown into turmoil. Initially, when Elijah had come to Zarephath, it seemed to this widow woman that all hope was gone. And yet God had very miraculously made provision for her and for Elijah, for her son. And it seemed as if everything was changing and that her troubles were now over. It seemed as if she had found herself in a place that she could never have imagined, because the bountiful blessing of God was resting upon her. But now she finds herself in the midst of another crisis. I remember being in conversation with someone one day at her hospital bedside. She was feeling down and she was overwhelmed by her circumstances, concerned about her family situation, and I sought to encourage her. And I said to her, listen, it looks bleak now, but when God closes one door, another door will open. Her reply was very simple and it was blunt, and I've never forgotten it. She says, Pastor, it seems in my life right now that every time God closes a door, another door shuts in my face. I'm sick of it. Beloved, we've all been there at one time or another. We understand the sentiments behind the hurt and the heartache of that woman at her hospital bed. And we'll try to understand something of the hurt and the heartache of this woman who is before us today at Zarephath, because sometimes in the midst of trials, sometimes when difficulties come, sometimes when crises come into our lives, we simply don't know how to cope. This woman here was no different. So let's look here first of all at a solemn tragedy, because that's how the story begins, a solemn tragedy. Look at what we read here in verse 17. Now, it happened after these things, and of course that refers back to those days when there was plenty in her home and there was little in the land because of the famine, and God had miraculously provided for her needs. It happened after these things that the son of the woman who owned the house became sick, and the sickness was so serious that there was no breath left in him. This woman experienced a very solemn tragedy, and there are three things at least that we can draw from her crisis at that time. The first thing is that her loss was unexpected. Her loss was unexpected. Not only had she responded to Elijah when he told her to go and make him a little cake and bring him something to drink, and then he explained to her how that God would make provision for them until the day would come when the famine would be over and the rains would come from heaven at God's word. Not only was she rejoicing in that command of Elijah, but she was rejoicing in the goodness of God. And every day she would have gone to that little bin of flour and that jar of oil, and she would have taken out exactly what she needed. She would have made her food for herself, for her son, and for Elijah. And day by day, as the famine continued to increase throughout the land, she surely would have become more amazed at the goodness of God, at his unending provision. This woman who once had nothing to live for was now a host to the servant of God. Life had never been better as she cared for Elijah and as she catered for his needs. And then when things are going so well in her life, suddenly everything changes. And she is thrown into turmoil. It happened that the son of the woman who owned the house became sick. His sickness was so serious, there was no breath left in him. The language used here suggests to us that her son was struck down very suddenly before anything could be done for him. It wasn't the case that her son was ill and then died after a prolonged illness where she had sat at the side of his bed trying to bring him comfort, trying to encourage him through some very dark, difficult days. The picture brought here is that this young fella had died suddenly and his death was completely unexpected. And you can imagine the impact that it must have had in this woman's life. She's lost her husband. She's a widow. She has tried desperately hard to raise her child. She's been trying to do the best that she could in what was already a very difficult situation. And now she's devastated again because she's lost her son and the bottom has dropped out of her world. We always need to realize, and especially when things are going well in our lives, that life is such and so uncertain and things can change quickly. Things can change so unexpectedly. Oh yes, I know that there are times when we need to plan ahead, but we need to live one day at a time because today is the only time we're guaranteed, and we need to maintain a good walk with God so that when our circumstances do change, and they will, they'll change quickly. That our trust is not in our circumstances, but that our trust is in the God who controls them. Beloved, you and I could be here this morning on top of the world. Tomorrow, any one of us could be in the depth of despair. A phone call concerning our health changes our whole direction in life. A death of a loved one turns our life upside down and it just wrecks the home. A family crisis robs us of our joy, throws us into the midst of despair. That's why we need to be dependent on God, because come what may and come what must, God is in control and we must learn to trust Him, even if it's difficult and dark and we can't understand it. Her loss was unexpected. Secondly, her reaction was understandable. Look at verse 18. She said to Elijah, "What have I to do with you, O man of God? Have you come to me to bring my sin to remembrance, to kill my son?" She turns around. She lashes out at Elijah in anger and in her frustration. She reproaches him. She has now forgotten about the blessings of God. She blames Elijah for her situation, and she must have wished deep down in her own soul that she had never, ever laid eyes on this man. I mean, after all, when he arrived in Zarephath, things were bad. She only had enough to make something to eat for her and her son. Her own cause was that when this was finished, she was going to go and she was going to lie down somewhere or sit down somewhere and she was going to die. But at least they would have died together. But Elijah came, and he came with the promises of God burning in his heart, and she had witnessed the provision of God now for many days, and suddenly her son's gone, and she doesn't know why. She can't understand it. She is angry, distressed, and she takes her frustration out on Elijah. She had believed he was a man of God, but now she's not so sure. And I say again, her reaction was understandable. In fact, it's the way that many of us react when our life takes a turn for the worst and we're going through the mill. We often wonder why this happens to me. Why my family again? And we can become angry about that. We wonder what on earth God is doing and why he allows this to happen. We begin to think that God doesn't care, and we think things like love, love, L-O-V-E, love, love, boundless and free, but we feel that God's love at this present time is not deep enough for me. We blame God. We blame the church. We blame the pastor. We blame everybody in sight because somebody must be responsible for the predicament I find myself in. And when we do that, we become frustrated, disappointed, sometimes bitter. And sometimes we never get out of that cycle of frustration. Do you remember Israel of old when God led them out of their bondage in Egypt? Remember how when they were moving out, they were so glad to be free of their oppression? They're standing at the other side of the Red Sea. Canaan's over here. There's so much yet to happen, and God miraculously brings them through. They're standing now at the other side, and Canaan is before them, and they're starting out rejoicing in the deliverance of God. And then they begin their march, and as soon as things go wrong, their whole attitude changes. No water, all of a sudden God doesn't care. Too much manna, they're tired of it, craving the delicacies of Egypt. There's a crisis, all of a sudden Moses is the worst in the world. They want to stone him. It's understandable. Beloved, life's difficulties can cause our faith to collapse. Life's disappointments can cause our hopes to be dashed. Life's problems can cause us to lose our joy of the Lord. But instead of reacting angrily and blaming God, we have to accept that sometimes in the providence of God, there are things that come into our lives and our homes I don't understand. Things you don't understand. But things that God knows everything about. And they come to make us better Christians, not bitter Christians. Dr. Joseph Parker was for many years the minister of the City Temple in London. When his wife died, he was absolutely devastated. He just couldn't come to terms with her loss. As a result of that, his faith collapsed. He described himself going through those days as an atheist. He blamed God for what had happened. He lost interest in Christian things. And this once great preacher, where multitudes had come to sit and listen to him, preaching the great doctrines of the faith, he doesn't believe in God anymore. And then God graciously restored him, restored his faith. He accepted the providence of God in his life. He went on to preach again and have a very powerful and fruitful ministry. I tell you something, that could happen to any one of us. There are people today that I know who walk well with God for years and years. And in their latter years today, they have no thought of God and don't want even to talk about God. That's why we need to learn to trust God, come what may, come what must. Her loss was unexpected. Her reaction was understandable. Her conscience was pricked. She says to Elijah, "What have I to do with you, O man of God? Have you come to bring my sin to remembrance and to kill my son?" It seems that this bereavement has now awakened her conscience. She didn't only blame Elijah. She wondered, had he come to call her sin to remembrance? It seemed to her that Elijah was responsible. He had inflicted this punishment upon her because of her sin. Do you know, sometimes it's a good thing when our conscience is awakened. Sometimes it's a good thing when something happens in life that we don't understand, and we maybe see it as a crisis, but in the midst of it, we hear the voice of God speaking to us. You take Paul and Silas in the prison cell, and the Philippian jailer who was a hard man. And there's suddenly an earthquake, and all of a sudden, in the midst of those circumstances, he awakens to his need. He comes to Christ. And his whole life changes. Sometimes that's how God does it, and that's how God deals with us. The death enters our home. Godly mother or father or partner is taken home to glory, and we're reminded of our own mortality and of the need to prepare to meet God. Crisis comes. Faith is shaken. We're driven back to God because we had lost our way spiritually. And God was no longer preeminent in our lives, and he had to remind us that he is in control. A global disaster shakes the world. People wonder, where is God? Where is your God? Why does this happen? And sometimes it's a reminder in the midst of all these what we call catastrophes that God speaks, that God still reigns, and that the whole world is under his control. This was a solemn tragedy. As far as this woman was concerned, her loss was unexpected, her reaction was understandable, and her conscience was pricked. But here's the second thing. Note a severe trial. Up until now, we have looked at this situation from the widow's point of view. What about Elijah? He finds himself in a very difficult situation. There's no doubt for him. This was a severe test of faith. And I want you to note how Elijah handled the situation. Firstly, his reaction was passive. When the woman reacted angrily, took her frustration out on Elijah, he didn't react. He didn't get the gloves on. You know, that's a good Ulsterism. He didn't say within himself, "The girl, I'll let you have it." No reaction. Passive. She wanted to make Elijah the scapegoat for the situation. It wasn't Elijah's fault. She wanted to take her frustrations out on Elijah, but he didn't respond the way she wanted him to do. She tried to provoke him, and she accused him. He simply turned around and said to her, "Give me your son. Give me your son." He didn't ask the woman what had happened or how he died. He simply trusted God and believed that God was going to do something miraculous again. Beloved, Elijah's response is to be admired. Something we could all learn from in our own dealings with others. How easy it is to retaliate when people vex and annoy us, they accuse us in the wrong. How easy it is to be provoked into saying things in haste when people rub us the wrong way. And at times we've done that, haven't we, and lived to regret it. The fuse is blown. Anger has been displayed. Words were spoken. Somebody was hurt. We wish we'd never opened our mouths. Why? Because we not only hurt them, we dishonored him and ruined their testimony in the process. Someone said this, and I like it. It's far better to swallow angry words than to have to eat them afterwards. It's better to swallow angry words than to have to eat them afterwards. You say, Pastor, it's hard to react when people abuse us. I understand that. It is. But our reaction should always be that of Christ, oppressed and afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. Brought as a lamb to the slaughter, as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth. Who, when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not. He committed himself to him that judges righteously. His reaction was passive. His response was prayerful. He said to her, give me your son. So he took him out of her arms, carried him to the upper room where he was staying, and laid him in his bed. Then he cried out to the Lord and said, O Lord my God, have you also brought tragedy on the widow with whom I lodged by killing her son? He stretched himself out on the child three times, cried out to the Lord and said, O Lord my God, I pray, let this child's soul come back to him. This wasn't easy for Elijah either. He had left Cherith, gone to Zarephath, just as God had said. He had faced dangers along the way. He had come to a situation where there was nothing, but God had promised to provide for him. God provides for him. Things are going great. Suddenly the child's dead, and here's a man stuck in the midst of it, facing frustration and anger from this widowed woman. What did he do? Well, he knew God had led him there. That was important. Because sometimes when we find ourselves in the midst of a crisis, it's good to know that God has you there. He knew that God was in control. He knew that God was able. And he asks for the boy and carries him up to his own bed. That simply means that Elijah would have had a little room of his own on the roof of the widow's house, probably kept for visitors. Elijah would have stayed there during his time in Zarephath. But the important thing is this, that when the situation was beyond his control, he took the matter to God. He spread the matter out before God. Beloved, that's the only way. Not just the best way, that's the only way that we can face the situations that life throws at us. Remember what Scriven said? Not great hymn, we'll sing it in closing soon. Have we trials and temptations? Is there trouble anywhere? We should never be discouraged. Take it to the Lord in prayer. Oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear, all because we do not carry everything to God in prayer. Sometimes we take our problems to others, that's good, but sometimes they can't help. Sometimes we try to solve them ourselves, and meddling makes things worse. Why take them to God? But I'll give you four reasons just in one sentence. He knows all about us and every circumstance we face. That's the first thing. Secondly, he's a very present help in every time of trouble. Thirdly, his ear is ever open to our cry. And fourthly, he has the power to change things even if it looks impossible to us. A man was convicted of a crime, sent to prison, and in prison he was converted to Jesus Christ through the prison chaplain. On his release, he went for a number of job interviews. Everything went well until he said he had been in prison and nobody wanted to know him. They wouldn't give him a job. So he did what he was told to do. He took the matter to God and he spread it out before God, and he told God that he not only wanted a job, but he needed a job, and he couldn't understand why God was not answering his prayers. And one day in his frustration, he lifted up his hands to heaven and he said, Lord, give this poor man a chance. And he went out for a walk. And down the street in great frustration, a horse-driven carriage came up the street, obviously out of control. Some children were hanging out of the side of the carriage crying out for help. And this man ran out in front of the carriage. He grabbed the reins of the horse, and hanging on to the reins, he was dragged up the street before he got the horse and carriage to stop. When he picked himself up and got to his feet, a man came over to him, and he was the father of the children. And he thanked him for what he'd done, and he said to the man, tell me, is there anything I can do for you? If so, you only have to ask. The man replied, sir, I need a job. And he got it immediately. Going further down the road, he lifted his heart heavenward and held up his hands. He said, Lord, thank you for giving this poor man a chance. Do you know what Francis Dixon says about Elijah's experience here? He says, Elijah's faith during testing led him to the throne of grace and to the God of all grace. If you and I are going to cope with all the difficulties and demands of life, our faith needs to lead us there too. I'll finish with this quickly. Solemn tragedy, a severe trial, a sure testimony. Look at verses 22 to 24. I'll not read them. But you'll note here that the Lord heard the voice of Elijah. He puts the boy in the bed, stretches on him, prays three times. Might seem strange to you and me, but remember it's the same 2 Kings 4:34 with Elisha and the home of the Shunammite woman. Same thing conveyed in Acts 20 with Paul and Eutychus. Elijah had seen God at work before. And he now prays. He knew nothing was too difficult for God. And God heard his prayer and restored the boy. But look what she said. The woman said to Elijah, now by this, I know that you're a man of God and that the word in your mouth is the truth. She could see something about Elijah. She refers to him as a man of God. She recognized he was a prophet. He spoke the word of the Lord. She recognized the power of God and the restoration of her son. And now she endorses Elijah's testimony and recognizes him for who he is. She recognized the reality and the power of a holy life. Now I know that you are a man of God. I close with this. What do people see in our lives today? When we stand and work with them at the workbench, when we rub shoulders with them in the yard, when we're standing in any situation whatsoever, if those people were asked to speak about us honestly, what would they say? Oh, he's a real man of God. Why? Do you know that your life and mine this week may be the only Bible people will read? The only contact we'll have with those who don't know the gospel? The only conversation with others who have no thought of God? When we go away from them and they go away from us, will they know we've been with Jesus? A home thrown into turmoil. But God was there. And God wrought another miracle. And God encouraged the faith of his servant. If you're there today or your home's there today, remember God's there too. And may he encourage your faith.